Hello, and thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to our regular listeners and to those who are joining us for the very first time. The numbers, the audience is growing steadily, so thanks to everyone for their continued support. Tell your friends, bring them along. We're trying to explore lots of different topics on the podcast, so if there is an issue you think we should be looking at tackling, or there are questions or comments, please let us know. Contact details will be in the notes that accompany each podcast. This episode is about a topic that is familiar to a lot of us, cloud services, and the work the ISF has done to map the SOGP to the cloud controls matrix of the CSA. We've got a roster of experts to talk through the mapping and the issues around using cloud systems securely, so it should be a good conversation. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF, and have, to be honest, I've been pretty curious for a long time about cloud services. They pop up in Threat Horizon, and I'm wondering how they're used and just the types of problems they cause members and organizations. So yeah, looking forward to this conversation. And I've got, let's say, good roster of experts to help with that. First up is Benoit Hendricks, a principal analyst at the ISF from our tools team, who is a longtime expert on cloud supply chain and Kira and numerous other things as well. Hello, Benoit.
Hello, Mark. Hello, everyone. Glad to be here today.
Yeah, you're a first timer on the podcast, though a veteran of webinars. So yeah, I'm sure you won't be overawed by the showbiz aspects of this. Also here is Ross Johnston, who is the security patterns and architecture lead at Bupa and a longtime user of ISF materials. Hello, Ross.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Benoit. Thanks for having me along today.
Good to have you here. Just a quick question. The clouds that Bupa uses, the cloud services, do you have a, I guess you, I would hope you have a good idea of how many there are, but I guess you're, because I did watch the webinar where yourself and Benoit talked about this, and I think there were some estimates of how many organizations generally use, but there's, it's a growing roster of number of cloud services that organizations use, and I guess that's the problem we're tackling here, isn't it, just getting a handle on all those.
Yeah, very much so. Bupa, like all large organizations, modern organizations, you can't not use cloud. And it's a complete mix of IaaS, PaaS, SaaS, pretty much every flavor of cloud out there, and they're across a number of different vendors. So the complexity is growing daily, I would say.
Yeah, it's, I'd say complex and changing as well. I mean, it's featured in Threat Horizon a few times in very different guises, and we follow that as well because we do report backs on some of the threats we identify. And even in the short time between the last Threat Horizon when we dealt with this, there's been some new issues have emerged. So yeah, it'd be good to go through some of those. Also here is Paul Watts, an ISF distinguished analyst and former CISO, who I'm sure has been bedeviled by cloud in the past. Hello, Paul.
Woohoo! Yeah, they let me back to do another podcast. Yeah,
good. Can't keep you away. So were clouds the bane of your life as a CISO, or is it one of those things that you sort of I suspect there's a lot of shadow IT to it that you sort of go, hang on, are we using that cloud? And there's problems like that emerge.
My relationship with cloud is like riding a roller coaster, good times and bad. And, as we were talking before we started recording, trying to control that sprawl, it's like trying to herd ants. I'm moving on from herding cats, and we're talking about herding ants now, because that's the topic of the day. We'll maybe explain why we said that a little bit later.
Yeah, listen to the end for an explanation of why ants are. But I would imagine ants are easier to herd than
cloud.
Cats. Yeah. Well, than the cloud, but
a bit more conformative. I think ants behave a bit better, I think, than some consumers of cloud.
Yeah, you can direct them with. There's some well-established methods of directing them. Certainly, same with bees. I'm a beekeeper, so yeah, I know how to get bees to do certain things. Though they're cussed creatures and often don't do that. Anyway, moving on quickly to cloud. So Benoit, just come to you first, and if you can take us through, I guess, the reason why this work was undertaken, and as well, what sort of work is involved in creating a cross-reference like this between SOGP and the cloud controls matrix.
Sure. Thanks, Mark, for the question. Mappings, cross-references, we've been doing this a lot at the ISF. We do this to ISO, to CIS, PCI, and Cloud Security Alliance is a very interesting organization. We've been looking at what they're doing. We know the cloud control metrics is a very popular offering as well. So we thought there's a natural fit there to try to map our SOGP to the cloud control metrics. Equally, we've been looking at the cloud control matrix since it's been published and it's used when we update the SOGP. SOGP is sort of best of all of the international standards out there. So we take the big ones, the important ones, the ones that really matter for members, for security professionals. But yeah, CSA was a natural addition to this list of cross-references.
I was just wondering, for the sake of completeness, we should probably explain what SOGP means to listeners who are not members of the ISF.
Yeah, it's a good chat. Yeah, so standard of good practice is our Bible, I suppose, the main reference work for that basic but complete level of information security practice, I guess. I mean, is that a good way to characterize it? Yeah, just sort of follow these instructions and you'll do a decent but basic job. And I guess, is that why the mapping came about? Is that I guess they have different perspectives, and unifying them, then you get a improved security controls system for your cloud services? Is that the idea here?
Yeah, I mean, SOGP, and apologies for all these acronyms, we're going to talk about SOGP and CCM and CSA. We obviously live and breathe by them. But SOGP, Standard of Good Practice, is the best of everything in information security. That's what we like to say about it. It takes all the best practices. It's a huge manual, of course, of good practices. Cloud has always been there, has always been in SOGP. Doing the mapping, I think, adds an extra layer of authority on this SOGP, saying that, yes, you can do cloud controls with SOGP. It maps to a specific framework on cloud. There's no reason why not to do cloud controls with something like SOGP. That's
Yeah, but I guess I'd imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the CSA is a bit more complete, because I guess that's all they do. They all worry about cloud, whereas SOGP is much more comprehensive. Like you say, it deals with most of the areas in information security,
I guess. Yes, I guess it's good to maybe move on to a more practitioner person like Ross.
But I would hope they're both useful to you, but I guess the cloud CSA aspect is slightly higher level. Don't know. I mean, yeah, educate me about sort of how you use both of those.
Sure. Yeah. So CCM sort of become the de facto standard, I guess, for, because it's got the word cloud in it. I think that's really why it's seen as the cloud framework to use. And I don't think it's necessarily because standard good practice or the other ones are necessarily lacking, but I think it uses the cloud terminology specifically. It's where SOGP will map to all the other ones as mentioned, NIST and ISOs and such like. But it's a great way, I found, especially now with the mapping, it's a really good way to turn then that more generic, standardized, centralized SOGP view of the world to specific cloud capabilities and functions and feature names. That's where I found the best of it. I'm not sure it tells me a huge amount more from a control expectation point of view. And I would like to think that because of the way we use SOGP and the way we've set up our reference architecture and we've cross-mapped all the different frameworks that are out there, we do have a robust view of controls and capabilities on-prem, off-prem, private, public cloud. I just think it really helps sort of maybe convert some of those common capability expectations into cloud-specific ways of calling them. I think that's the key benefit I've seen personally from it.
Right. I guess, yeah, you sort of got that good starting point, because I guess the other side of this is that, for want of a better term, mess of cloud services you've got, and you need a way to understand what's happening with all of them, or at least a way that they should be used. But I guess that's just the first stage, because then I guess internally as an organization, you've got some education and other work to do just to make sure that those standards, controls, etc., processes are being adhered to or observed or even learned about.
Yeah, so large organizations like Bupa, regulatory entities of us, and previously to Bupa, I was in NatWest, so a highly regulatory banking environment. And they use different frameworks when they come and talk to you. So you get surveys, and some of them will say NIST, some will be a PCI framework. And you ended up duplicating all your work. You had to create multiple reference libraries so you could quickly answer, response, and get consistency. And again, that's when bringing in SOGP for those type of, I think, regulatory environments really helps, because it means you've got that answer once or document once and answer many is the way that I like to think of it. And if you take large organizations who are global, like Bupa, you've also got global entities you have to deal with, and different parts of the business might prefer a different framework. And we don't want to restrict anybody to one specific use. So we're quite open then to say, use NIST, you want to be ISO, you've got a PCI element, all good. We know that we can be confident in that the patterns that we're building, the architectural practices that we're encouraging, they are comprehensive to cover all of those different environments and different frameworks.
I'm 100% behind that. In, you know, multinationals I've worked, especially in umbrella corporate structures where everybody's been given a degree of freedom or autonomy, you find that people gravitate to particular standards and frameworks like HIPAA and ISO and HITRUST and PCI and so on and so forth. But when you then need to aggregate that, using the standard of good practice and those mapping tools as a pivot point to be able to aggregate everything together, I tell you what, that makes my life so much more easier, in quotes, because it's never easy, but it's easier for sure. But the big blind spot has always been, what do we do with cloud on a more molecular level? So, you know, I'm absolutely, you know, really, really pleased to see that the CSA mapping has now been introduced to that. I think that's, you know, the latest part of the jigsaw. And, you know, it's great to be able to now take all of that cloud infrastructure, wherever it may well be, and reconcile some of that back to the standard of good practice in itself. It's definitely a massive step forward. And I can see, you know, numerous ISF members who will get massive benefit from that.
Yeah, I was going to ask Ben, well, have we had some good feedback from members about this as well? Just the sort of, it's solving them problems, because like Ross said, whatever way they come at trying to sort out the cloud services, then they can plot a route through those maps and say, well, yeah, no matter what, we're there with that one.
Sure. There's a lot of demand from the membership and security professionals for us to do this work. We've already done some presentations at one of our recent events at ISF Congress with the CSA, a joint presentation with CSA. It was a very busy, very welcome presentation. There's lots of interest. And even prior to this mapping as well, we did some work previously with the CSA. We did some research on cloud security. So the membership, the experts are all interested on cloud. I'd like to add also that it's, to me, cloud is this word which I don't really like anymore. The cloud specific, the cloud, it becomes more and more morphed into a sort of normal data center, outsourced data center, not outsourced data center. We talk about hybrid, and that's why I think it was, it's very important to do this mapping and to give this message that you don't have to use a specific cloud between brackets framework to control your cloud environments. Any standards of information security can help you with that. There are obviously a few specificities and in the cloud control metrics, I think Ross, you were talking about this a little bit, but there's not that many.
So I think it's a good point, Ben Mark, because I think it's very morphed now, it's very hybrid. So where people used to talk quite happily about CSPs, cloud service providers, and CSCs, cloud service customers, it really does depend on the environment now. It's not simply saying, oh, the CSP is Amazon or Azure, because if it's a hybrid or a private cloud, well, actually your internal operations or maybe a outsourced third party become your CSP, and they have to then obviously be aware of the requirement of the shared responsibility model, what actually needs built. So when you do use things like CCM and such like, you have to still use it contextually to the environment that you're applying it to. It's not as simple as going, that's not my problem, that's a CSP problem. Actually, it could be your own organization's problem or your third party that you've maybe done some sort of outsourcing with. So I think it's really important to still have that contextual version, any framework that we use across industry, is that taking the framework and the mappings, but then contextualizing them for your environment so that you're not going to leave any gaps or any potential areas of exposure.
I was going to pick you up on that, actually. It's an interesting one, using the word control in the cloud control matrix, because one of the things that we've kind of grappled with as cloud has just mushroomed into this hybrid thing, and you know, those lines between on and off-prem have become quite blurred. One of the challenges that we have to overcome is moving into certain faculties of cloud infrastructure. We have to relinquish an amount of control. You know, there's this notion that the cloud is just somebody else's computer, and you know, traditional failure modes in cloud data centers are no different to what we see in on-prem data centers. But we do lose some of that control. When you then reconcile that back to, you know, broader frameworks in terms of, are we on top of all of this? How do we address that relinquishing of control versus the benefits of moving things into the cloud? Is that something that you've looked at in Bupa as you've started to stand up those control environments and aggregate everything up to say we are putting everything in the right direction? Just be interested in your views on that, actually.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. There is that line of, I guess, handing over control, that you have to perform the right levels of assurance to get the trust in the underlying provider, whatever that may be. If you start throwing in serverless, you've got a whole new world to look at, where it's a shared stack, it's a queue that everybody else is using, and there's certain things you can put in place to help protect against that, as you can with all the other layers of cloud itself. So I think it's really about making sure you do a really good due diligence on the cloud provider. And one I used to always say is that cloud is secure. It depends what you do with it, depends how secure. So the cloud provider, out the box, if you leave everything off, so S3 bucket on the internet, you don't switch it off as an example, you've got an immediate exposure. You can make it secure by taking it off the internet and putting layers of authentication, authorization, encryption, and all these multiple layers of controls and capabilities. It's finding that balance, I guess, for your organization, and also very much driven by data, PII, GDPR, all of those regulatory entities requirements have to be thrown on top as well. So it really is about recognizing the benefits versus the risk and the threats which cloud gives you, a whole new threat posture using cloud. I guess there's complete new layers of exposure that you have to take into account. So it's go with care, make sure you're using the right level of security. Again, the frameworks help you direct in that direction. It helps make you consider certain things in certain ways. But again, it comes back to being contextual for your business. Cloud isn't right for everybody all the time. And there may be some things you say it's just not right for that service or that, based on your own risk and threat profiles.
It was a mistake that a lot of people made in the early days, actually. And I think this is maybe where the CCM will help, where if an organization invested into, let's say, infrastructure as a service, let's go with that. And then they're thinking about ISO certification and they look across to Azure and they say, we're trying to do ISO. And they go, oh, it's great. Look, go to the Trust Center, download our ISO certification, job done. And the big gotcha that a lot of people recognized or fell into was there's a line. So everything below that line is covered by that certification in IaaS, but everything above that line is your responsibility. So you've relinquished some control and you've retained some others. It's really important you understand that, because then when you look at the totality of that, you can't rely just on their certification. And that, I think, is where the mapping kind of helps, and that aggregation into the organization's control frameworks in totality, just to realize who's doing what to who, when, and why, responsibilities, accountabilities. And it opens up a whole level of complexity that, you know, some organizations have really been caught out with. Do you agree with that? Have you had similar experiences?
Yeah, definitely, from previous roles in the bank and where I am now, that especially, I think, SaaS, I think, was seen as being the fix for everything. Don't worry, just put your data in and use the application. But there's such a high risk, I guess, threat profile from jumping straight into SaaS and not doing the analysis of what's underneath that. Where's your data residency? Are you getting told if there's any breaches, for example, within that provider? There's an awful lot of things you have to build in. And a lot of that is at the supply chain services, the adoption layer. But security sits there as much as it does as a firewall and a WAF in front of the service. So you have to really get into that from a security point of view. And again, there are sections in the frameworks which helps much of that, to keep going back to the benefit of things like SOGP, because it has procurement, it has risk assessment type security assurance sections. It's not just about the technology-based controls all the time. There's a lot of process operating controls that you need to put in place. And very, very much for, especially for SaaS. SaaS can be, I think there's a lot of potential exposure with a lot of SaaS services out there.
I think just on that, and then I think context is really important. And that's the bit that it's, especially when we've now moved into hybrid architectures, you've got to be really, really clear on context to select the right controls. Otherwise, you aren't necessarily treating the risk in the way that you would expect to be.
Ross mentioned the Amazon S3, and certainly as a very crude hacker. I've run scripts across S3 buckets to try and see which one you find. Is amazing what you could find. And but I was going to ask Benoit, just in terms of, you know, that maturity, because you covered cloud at the ISF for a while. So I guess, I don't know, in the early days, I get, like Paul said, maybe people did jump for cloud because they thought, well, there's some standardization there and, you know, it maybe solves some security process issues for them. But I guess they realize they've stepped into a very complicated world, and actually, you know, they, like, their responsibilities change, but they've not gone away. And there's still, you know, there's a maturity and a realization that people need to get, go through as they adopt these kinds of services.
It does add a new, different layer of complexities. Yeah, it leads to the supply chain topic as well. Even more, it brings it even more to the fore, because as we've just discussed, when you engage your services with cloud providers, it's not just about is it IaaS, is it PaaS, is it SaaS, because these are very broad categories. Every service you purchase from a cloud provider is different. An IaaS in AWS is different from an IaaS in Azure. So you have to contracts, you have to understand what you're getting, what you're not getting, and then where you need to build these controls and when you can relinquish the controls, as Paul said, and where's the line, really? And yes, in the old days, not so old, but the old days, we could say there was an assumption from security experts, from IT experts, that cloud is cloud and we don't need to do any controls there. The cloud providers are taking care of everything for me. Great. But that's definitely changed. And this is something that I think we can say pretty confidently, security experts, IT experts now know that cloud is not something they can just ignore and assume that all the controls are taken care of.
Yeah, you can't just set and forget it. Yeah, I think, so having done some work on governance last year, so one of the aspects that we explored a little, but I think at some point I'm sure we'll come back to, is just how it changes that governance and just oversight stance that actually, like you say, in some cases, in some ways, you are happy to abdicate some of that control because it you know, it gets it off your back. But, you know, other different problems come in, and then you realize that what you've abdicated is maybe something that you didn't want to lose control of, and that you do need to keep oversight of these things. And I guess that's where the mapping starts to help. You can get a sense of what you've done and where you are. And like I say, no matter which way people come to it, then you know, they'll have the reassurance that they are hitting the right kinds of marks. But I don't know, Benoit, are there a couple of good examples out there, practical examples of how the mapping can be used that you can think of? Or is it one of those things that, like you say, it's complicated? Yeah,
I like to talk about it. These examples, it can sound a little bit dry as a topic, isn't it? Control, mapping to another control. So what am I going to do now? What am I going to do with this? So let's take an example, something that members, professionals like to think about, or how do I do secure configuration, for example. Secure configuration is something you can do with the two frameworks, really, with CCM. There's a nice little control domain called infrastructure virtualization. It has quite a lot of good controls there that will help you to secure your configuration, your environment. And then in SOGP, we have, again, a lot of controls of good practices in this area. We have a topic on virtualization, a topic on how to segregate your network devices. All these are mapped. So I like to say, if you want to start, for example, with CCM, you can look at this control domain on IVS, infrastructure virtualization, and then look at all the corresponding controls or topics in our framework SOGP. And you can complement and enrich, of course, your all your controls in this area of secure configuration. That's how I would use the mapping, starting with one or the other, and then looking at the complementary aspects.
Yeah. And Ross, I guess, has it simplified your job a bit, or is it, I'm just curious about sort of, yeah, that practical aspect of it, I suppose. It just sort of gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling that you've got a sense of these things are working now, and I know you know what you need to do.
Yeah, it's saved a lot of time, definitely, for having to do that mapping myself when, again, because we talked at the start about different parts of different businesses wanting to use different frameworks, and then you have to sort of please everybody by assuring them that this capability or this configuration expectation is needed because And people like to say, well, we use NIST and, or we use CCM or we use whatever. So it really simplifies that mapping. And even from the right at the base where we start our architectural reference architect for security, we call out security capabilities, controls, and we want to justify them. So we want to very easily say this is a thing, cloud bring your own key, for example, because it's mentioned in these frameworks at this section at this point. So therefore, it's very easy to justify why we're asking a business to think about a certain control within a certain environment and to configure it in a certain way. So it really, for me, it joins it up and it just gives you that fuzzy feeling, I guess, that you're hitting all of the exam questions that your business are going to give you really easily. And it is that. So like we talked earlier, SOGP being the Bible, I jokingly get asked, oh no, he's got his Bible out again, because I've got the paper copy, because being the account holder, you get your paper copy, and it's really useful to have that, to old school, to thumb through paper. And regularly on calls, people see me going into my drawer and pulling out this big book and then looking it up.
Excellent.
And then going
to
spreadsheets.
Like,
so it's all that mapping stuff really makes a huge difference. And to Ben Marr's point as well, I guess that there are some capture all, I guess, topics, I would say, in SOGP. You've got your cloud security, for example, and it brings together the sub capabilities and controls and topics that you should consider to, and there's web security type thing, how to secure a web server and all that stuff. It really brings it together. And then again, through that, you can map out to, well, what would CCM say at this point about configuring a web server securely, because we've got those mappings. So it really gives you that robustness.
And on the seventh day, Ross patched his vulnerability 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, rebooted his servers, and he saw that it was good.
The vulnerability had gone.
Right, yeah. Indeed, yeah. Genesis rather than Revelations, I hope. But I think we've said this before many times, I think that security is a feeling as much as it is activity and capability. So I think, yeah, having that, I get it now, sort of why this is really useful and, you know, why organizations do want it, because, like I say, it gives you a bit of a heft behind your justification as much as anything else. That, plus, it's really complicated. So if you have a guide to it, then, yeah, that helps too, because if people need justification, you can just wave SOGP at them. But also, you know, it gives you a good reason as to, you know, there are good reasons underlying all this as to why these steps are taken, for sure.
I think the other thing I would say, and I say this with a side order of facetiousness, is we're now in a situation where we have to explain to our boards why the run maintain cost of this swanky new cloud infrastructure is considerably higher than we had maybe led them to believe when we went into the boardroom all excitedly and went, got a great idea, let's put everything in the cloud because it's somebody else's problem then. But, you know, the CCM mapping to the standard of good practice allows us to actually say, actually, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but we can now show our workings out and show why it's complicated, but what the prize is for getting it right, and maybe get slapped around the head by the lords and masters in the process. But that's just part of the journey that we have to go on to. Sounded really easy. We all fell for it. We all scrambled into the cloud. Now we're having to apply a degree of rigor and strategy around that. And this mapping just allows us to do that within the confines of control structures that we already have in place. And it gives us that harmonization. It controls the overhead, the cost, the friction. And it allows, you know, people like Ross and the team at Bupa to do all of these things in a very, you know, collaborative, aggregate and an efficient way, I guess. I'm not putting words in your mouth. Ross, feel free to disagree with everything I just
exactly,
said. But
exactly what I was about to say.
Excellent. Yeah, because I've seen there's quite been a few stories on Hacker News about organizations. I think new CIO is starting to look at their cloud bill going, how much? And then sort of wanting to flip back to data centers, and then people pointing out all kinds of things about why that might not be a great idea, given, you know, how lean a structure and a hierarchy they have. But yeah, I think it's, you know, I get it a bit more, much more now about how, you know, how useful this could be. But just conscious slightly of the time. So any final thoughts from everybody, Benoit? I don't know if is there a next steps for the mapping and the things that we're doing on cloud? I don't know if there's more research you've got going forwards, or yeah, anything cloud-based that people should look out for.
In 30 seconds, I won't be able to tell everything we're doing, but what I'd like to finish on is choose your control framework. I think is the important, your starting point, SOGP or CCM. In the case of being a DSF, I would highly recommend the SOGP. And you can be assured that you have access to all of the best of these international standards.
Ross, final thoughts from you on clouds and mapping controls, those kinds of things. Do you sleep easier at night because thanks to this?
I think I can finish up earlier because I don't have to do as much late nights mapping. That definitely helps.
There's his benefit right there, I think.
Yeah, I think a wise man once told me that no framework is right. Just some are more useful than others. And I think what this does is this brings together the usefulness of lots of frameworks into one place. So therefore, you get the best of all. I think that's the bit for me, is that you'll never ever convince, you'll very rarely convince somebody to use one framework over another. But the point of this is you don't have to now. You can use all of the frameworks in the best possible way.
Paul, any final thoughts CloudWise? You're glad you hands off these days, or you want to dive back in now because of the mapping?
What I would say is a slight variation of that. So, I've been working with the ISF as a member for many, many years as a practicing CISO, and now, on the other side of the fence, helping CISOs try and make some sense of it all. And as the years have gone by, the power of using the standard of good practice as a pivot point for all of these legal and regulatory overheads is becoming more and more useful to our members. Now, the legal and regulatory frameworks in which we operate are vast, and there are some that are rising to the surface as becoming, more interesting for more members to focus on. So NIS2, DORA, the Financial Services Resiliency Frameworks. There are drawdowns and demands for us to take those and also map those to the standard of good practice. That is absolutely something that we would look at. My advice to ISF members would be, please use the power of the community to upvote and put your ideations into the future research hub, vote for which frameworks you want us to map next. I think that's really, really important. And for non-members who are listening to this, absolutely hand on heart, and I can say this as a practitioner, as an ISF member of the global team, it really has value to be able to take all of that, different disparate regulations and aggregate them to a single focal point, and reach out and talk to us if you want to learn a little bit more about, how we've done that with other members, or listen to future podcasts, because I don't think this is a topic that we will do once. I'm sure we will come back to these use cases over and over again.
Yes, we're very keen to feature members on the ISF podcast. Many thanks to Ross for joining us. And we should say why there was that Ant reference at the start, because of Ant's family connection. I think you said your son was interested in Ants particularly for a while, or still is?
Yeah, that's right. He goes by the name Ant Boy. He's been lucky enough to be on Spring Watch and Countryfile and the likes, really talking about insects, and ants is his speciality. So, yeah. There's lots of things we could learn from ants, I guess, with their how organised and conformative, I guess, they can be. So, yeah, take a lot of lessons from life from ants, I think.
Thanks, Benoit. Thanks, Paul, as well. And thanks, everybody else, for listening. Like I say, tell your friends. The audience is growing. You know where you should be. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. If you look at the show notes, that'll give you a link to the page on Audioboom where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. Podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research tools and guidance. Thank you.